All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And we're joined by a special guest. I think it's your second or third time on the podcast, right?
My second time on here.
Second time. It's Brandon Leon. It's Hunter's brother. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
All right, so let's just jump straight into it. Since we haven't done the podcast in a couple of weeks, there's a ton to get into. So we'll start with Christmas Day, where we saw a ton of great games. It's always a great tradition to have so many NBA games on Christmas. And let's start with the Philadelphia 76ers defeating the New York Knicks at Madison Square Garden. Harden and Embiid combined for 64 points, Harden at 13 assists in that game. A big win for the Sixers. And now the Sixers, I mean, they lost their last game, but they're four games back from the one seed in the East. The East is looking really stacked, at least toward the top. So, Hunter, what do you think of this game?
Yeah, I mean, this was a game. I watched the entirety of it. This is a West Coast 9 a.m. game. So we're talking like NBA full slate Christmas Day. And the Knicks came out and they looked red hot. The Sixers looked really slow and Embiid kept turning it over. And I was watching this game and going, wow, the Knicks do look really good here. RJ Barrett was playing great defense. And going into halftime, I think it was like a 10 or 12 point game. And I didn't think it was over, but I definitely thought that the Knicks had control of it. And then the second half, they came out looking like a different team. And this was without Tyrese Maxey, by the way. No Tyrese Maxey in this one. And they looked really great. Harden took over the game for the most part. I'd say just those assists really setting up Embiid and the rest of his teammates. And it just ended up being a convincing win for them. Not just a slight win, but I think they ended up winning by like 12 or so points. Say the big turnaround in that second half. And I really think that win resembles the Sixers team throughout the year, like a slow start kind of team who's going to build their way through the season and be like very dominant by the end of it. And Brandon, I know you didn't see this game probably because it was 9 a.m. and you're probably sleeping. But just what are your general thoughts on the Sixers this year and the Knicks while we're on the topic of them as well?
I was actually going to say that my plan was to wake up for the game, but obviously that didn't end up happening. But yeah, looking at the box score, Embiid with 35 points, I think he's one of the front runners for MVP. There's a lot of guys this season that are playing like incredible MVP type seasons, so that's really tough to like have him out of there with the season he's having. But there's so many different guys. I think the Sixers have a legit shot at going to the conference finals. In terms of the Knicks, I don't know that they can go very far. I don't really see them going very far. I don't think that they have the best lineup for that. You gotta have like a real all-star when it comes to the playoffs. And I think that Julius Randle, they have Barrett, but those guys aren't gonna be enough when it comes to the playoffs. So I don't think that they're a real legitimate threat.
Yeah, we've talked about that a little bit on this podcast, but do you think there's anything that the Knicks could do to change that situation for themselves?
Wait, I mean, hold on. Let's not forget about Jalen Brunson here. I mean, we're talking about these guys. Let's not forget about Jalen
Yeah,
Brunson.
no. I'm not saying I necessarily agree with Brandon, but I'm just asking you, do you think that there's something the Knicks need to do if you think they're in a situation where they can't win?
I mean, like, I just see them as one of those teams that goes to the playoffs, maybe like an LA Lob City type Clippers team. Like, just goes to the playoffs, loses, and there's not much that they're able to do to kind of improve their situation. So, like, they're not going to be able to do much to put themselves over the top.
I mean, I sort of agree with Brendan here. I think that, the Knicks are sort of capped off by like how good Julius Randle could be. And I think we've seen like the peak of Julius Randle in 2021 when he had that all-star season, a bit of a fluke season, if you ask me. And also like I think the Knicks are still waiting to see the RJ Barrett that was promised. This is a guy that went what, number three overall in the draft. And there was a lot of expectation coming with Duke, Zion's teammate, et cetera. And he's never really played up to his potential. He started the season off incredibly cold, and he slowly looked better and better. I mean, he looked pretty good in that game against the Sixers. And Randle has also turned his season around. But I just don't think, a core of Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, Jalen Brunson, and I guess if you want to throw like Mitchell Robinson in there too, and some of the other young guys. is going to go very far. I like there. I think there's a lot of young talent, and this is a team that can be built up for the future. But yeah, I don't think they're going to really be doing anything anytime soon.
Yeah, I will say for them, Mitchell Robinson has been a highlight for them. I mean, he's a guy who really has improved statistically. I mean, going from like maybe a 10 and 10 to like a 16 and 10. So, I mean, he's definitely upped his production. I mean, just he's always efficient and a great shot blocker. But yeah, I mean, they're still a young team for the most part. But if you look at the other teams in the East, we're talking Sixers, Celtics, Bucks. I do not see them beating out any of those types of teams. And I know there's some teams I didn't name in there, but just naming a few.
Yeah, I mean, even a team like the Hawks, if you want to talk, or not the Hawks, sorry. I mean, yeah, the Hawks maybe, but like, what's it called, the Cavaliers. Like, that's a team that's, up there in the top of the East, and that's a team I would take any day over the Knicks.
I think that pretty much about wraps up the Sixers-Knicks game. And I want to move on to this next game. But there's not much to talk about this one. I did sadly watch the entire game. This is the Mavericks versus the Lakers. This was not a close one. Luka had an incredible performance, but this is more typical for him than incredible with 32, 9, and 9. But really, the highlight of this game for them was Christian Wood having 30 points, 8 boards, and 7 assists. This is Christian Wood's dominance was really due to the lack of Lakers' size. Inability to rebound the ball.
We saw the infamous Darvingham five guard lineup out there. It was abysmal. It was honestly a war crime, and Darvingham
I
should
think the
honestly
lineup
be
was
investigated.
Dennis Schroeder, Russell Westbrook, Patrick Beverley,
Austin Reeves.
Austin Reeves, and
One other guard, I can't recall. But anyway, yeah, that lineup was abysmal, and the Lakers did not look good in this game.
was it Kendrick Nunn?
Might
Did you
have
think
been.
about Schroeder? Did you say his name?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
But regardless, I don't really think we have to talk about the Lakers because it's just we're gonna be talking to them a little bit later.
Hey, I mean, LeBron at 38. I mean, he's chasing Kareem. That will really
And
be the highlight of the Lakers season.
question for you. Actually, I'm gonna ask Brandon first because I know that you're not like a LeBron hater, but I wouldn't say you're the biggest LeBron fan either. So I think you're pretty neutral on this. Do you think that LeBron at this point in his career, like at least is chasing Kareem, like maybe not as much searching for wins as he used to be, like that would be a nice addition to his resume as like a ring. Do you see him more trying to get those points to rack up that scoring title for himself, like just in the grand scheme of things? Or do you think he really does want to win?
I would say that I think that as a player, when you are conscious of the fact that you have come so close to like an all-time record like that, that's going to stay conscious in your mind. You're not going to be able to do much about that. And so maybe he is in some situations trying to score a little bit more than he has in the past. I don't think that he like is making bad decisions on the court. If I'm watching him play and he's making the right decisions, I think it's not him who's the problem with the Lakers. It's just the whole organization as a whole. But yeah, when you have that conscious record in your mind, it definitely plays an impact on his scoring, I think. And also, I don't know if you guys saw, but he had that deleted tweet. It was he said that he's not going to allow the Lakers to be out of the playoffs this year. I don't know if that says want them to win anymore, but that says something.
Okay, I mean, I agree with Brandon here. Like, I think that, obviously, I think this, like, the weight of this award cannot be overstated. And so, obviously, LeBron is trying to, like, chase this award, but I don't think it's really impacting the Lakers as a whole. I think this is literally like LeBron's gonna, stay in the game a little longer than he probably should. He might play when it's a bit of a blowout just so he can like score more. But he's playing like we've seen LeBron play year after year. He's just doing everything very efficiently, playmaking, finding his teammates, rebounding, scoring, doing everything.
Yeah, I will
LeBron is
say
LeBron.
LeBron recently went on a tear in this past seven great, or there was a seven game stretch where he scored 30 points straight, which I think ties all time for him, his second highest record in his NBA career, for 30 point games in a row, which is really crazy to think about in year 20.
That is wild. But honestly, like, here's the thing. You could make the case that that's not even LeBron chasing the scoring record. That's just because the Lakers just don't have that many players that can score.
Yeah, well, think about it this way. When Anthony Davis goes down, you're going to need to have somebody fill that void with your scoring. So it's going to end up being LeBron. But really, I don't think the Lakers are a team we should be talking about here. I really do think it is the Mavericks. And they were red hot from the three this game. I mean, they were just, it seemed like they were hitting every single three they took. We saw them in the playoffs last year. This whole idea, we've talked about this a lot. This, I'm just going to shoot a million threes a game. And I hope, or we're going to be on tonight and we're going to make a lot of them. And if we're hitting our threes, it's impossible for any team to beat us. We very clearly see this works when it's on, like against the Lakers. They very clearly, convincingly won. But what can the Mavericks do when hitting their threes isn't happening at a 40, 45% clip?
Lose. That's like all.
Do you think there's anything they can do to supplement that? Do you think there's any player on the team who can maybe help provide something else that's not Luka?
See, the thing, this we're gonna go into this comparison a little bit later, but these Mavericks teams remind me a lot of like the Houston Rockets teams that had James Harden on it, you know?
2017,
Yeah,
like pre-Chris
2017.
Paul, pre-Chris Paul.
Exactly. Pre-Chris Paul, right? Because it was basically just James Harden. And honestly, like even during the Chris Paul days, like the Rockets fully bought into like the live by the three, die by the three philosophy. And when their three wasn't hitting, we saw what happened. You know, 27 straight misses from three to lose that game seven against Golden State.
I think that was with Chris Paul, right?
Yeah, I'm saying that's I'm saying even with Chris Paul,
And
like.
then even when they got Russell Westbrook, they went even farther and got rid of a big man. They had PJ Tucker, who's 6'7", plays their center the entirety of the season, ended up losing to the Lakers in the bubble.
Yeah, so I'm saying like this strategy just clearly is limited. Like it can't work forever because eventually your players are going to miss shots. And when that's the sole basis of your offense, what are you going to do? Because Luka is, no matter what, Luka's finding his shooters. It's just a matter of whether they're going to hit those shots or not, you know? And honestly, I don't think the Mavericks personnel is that good for them to go that far to make it to like the finals to win a championship, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with you. But I think that is enough of the Mavericks Lakers if we're in the same spot. And I'm
Yeah.
ready to move on to this next game, which is
Yeah. Let
Celtics
me
Bucks.
ask you about this one, Hunter, because
Go ahead.
you've been introducing them. So the Celtics played the Bucks here, and it was like a pretty convincing win for the Celtics. Tatum looked incredible in this game, just like, you know, scoring from all three levels, turnaround jumpers, 3-point shots, just very, very electric scoring from Jason Tatum. And the Celtics as a whole shot the lights out, almost 50% from three. What were your main takeaways from this? And also, I want to hear your thoughts on how you thought Giannis performed, because to me, he was a bit underwhelming.
Yeah, go ahead, Brandon. I'll let you start with this one because you've been talking too much.
What time was this game at? I don't even know if I was able to watch this one. But
Want to say this was like a 2:30, maybe around there,
oh yeah,
2:30.
I probably hit the end of this one. I think I woke up at like 1. But yeah, Giannis was kind of underwhelming. I agree with Rafa with 27, shot under 50%. Didn't hit his threes, which is typical. But I mean, they won by 20 points. So, I mean, that's pretty commanding victory by the Celtics. They were at home. I think maybe it's just the whole crowd going on Christmas Day. That could be a possibility. Also, the Celtics did beat Milwaukee during the playoffs as well. So, I think this is also kind of like a Milwaukee trying to get back at them. And the Celtics responded with, yeah, we're still that guy and we're not going to let you beat us. So I think this is an even bigger statement from the Celtics with the Bucks team. I don't know if this is the first matchup of the season, but if it was definitely a statement.
I'm not sure if this is their first matchup either. I think they might have already played their other game. But to me, what I saw in this game was definitely a less aggressive Giannis than usual. The defense really bothered him. I think what really bothered him most was a healthy Rob Williams. I think he's been back. I mean, he was really hobbled in that series, the entirety of the playoffs last season, and he's back and he's healthy now. And I really do think that 20 minutes a game he's providing for the Celtics team has really helped and improved their game. Also, another guy I want to highlight for them is Malcolm Brogdon. I can't state enough how much this guy has added to their team and the diversity in their offense and in their defense, because he literally can just do it all. And I think the one thing that they've really been missing on the Celtics squad is a facilitator, kind of like how we've talked about this Clippers team in the past. Is like, yeah, you have Reggie Jackson, but you don't have a real facilitator. They really do have a real true facilitator in Malcolm Brogdon, who's very efficient and makes good decisions. And
yeah,
it's gone a long way for them.
Yeah, I'll say that about Malcolm Brogdon. I think he's one of, honestly, the most cerebral players in the NBA. I think you rarely see him make a bad decision, a bad pass. You know, he doesn't turn the ball over that much. He only really takes good shots. He's just such a smart player, and he complements the Celtics offense perfectly. I wouldn't say he, like, adds too much to their defense. I think, as you said, Rob Williams is really, I think, the main piece in, like, creating that defensive masterclass that they had and making Giannis look not as dominant as he normally does. But, yeah, he's such a big piece to their offense and just leading that bench unit. I mean, what can we say about Jason Tatum, Hunter?
I mean, incredible. Obviously, he's an MVP talks, and this is a guy just very efficient. I mean, you can't ask for more than 40 points in 30 minutes, just efficient. I feel like this is not like a quote-unquote typical stat line for him, but what I'd expect of a superstar to bring in an important statement game on Christmas Day, and he did deliver. So another thing I want to mention in this game, though, is the fact that Chris Middleton did not play. He didn't play in that Bucks series against the Celtics in the playoffs, but we do know him as the Celtics killer. Every time he plays the Celtics, for some reason, he just has a great game. So every time I see the Bucks play the Celtics without Chris Middleton, there's a little asterisk on that victory, but every victory is a good victory. So I'm not going to, like, knock the Celtics for this one. But I really do want to see Chris Middleton out there again, because he just adds so much to
everything. Are you a concern about Chris Middleton? Because when you think about him, I mean, you don't normally think of him as a guy in the same vein as, like, I don't know, Anthony Davis or, like, one of these other injury-prone players, but I feel like he's missed a lot of time. Is that just my perception of it, or, like, do you think he's actually, like, we ought to start maybe considering him, like, injury-prone?
No, I wouldn't call him injury prone, but he definitely has been injured for this, like, season. I think he missed the first 20 games straight, and he had an off-season surgery, I think it was. I think that's the reason he was injured in the first place, and I just don't think he's fully ever recovered from that. I think maybe they pushed the recovery process a little bit too much. But then after that happened, he was starting to play again, and he just got unlucky with a knee injury. Which happened about 2 weeks ago, and he hasn't been playing since. So I'm really just hoping for the best for him. I wouldn't call him in that injury-prone category yet, because, you know, things happen where it's like, oh, you finally get back and boom, another injury hits you right away.
Yeah.
But I still won't call him that unless, like, another injury happens, just back to back to back to back. I feel like, you know, these kind of things happen. You're playing hard out there, especially at the forward position. I think that these are guys who are banging hard against each other. And sometimes you just get into these collisions.
I think also, I don't want to say that he doesn't have an impact, because obviously as an all-star player, he has a major impact on the team. But, I mean, the Bucks are still one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference missing him, and I don't know that they play. Obviously, he adds a different dimension to the team. I don't want to make this sound skewed, but they don't really seem to play better or win more when he's there, or at least that's just how I see it.
I think it doesn't make a difference in the regular season.
I think it honestly, like, I'm more inclined to agree with Hunter here. Like, in games like this, which, like, you see this game, Bucks Celtics, both teams approach this with sort of that playoff intensity, and this felt more almost like a playoff game. Like, this is a game where they really would need Chris Middleton. You could tell the Bucks offense, it gets a little stagnant sometimes. You know, they don't really have that many shot creators. They do have shooters, but, like, none like a guy like Chris Middleton, who can really just make his own shot and get a guy off the dribble, create a little pull up, you know, just such a diverse score. Because then you have, like, Giannis, and he'll pass it to, like, Grayson Allen to make something happen, or Pat Connaughton. And it's like, that's not really where you want your offense coming from.
Those aren't the guys you want.
Yeah, exactly.
But I will highlight also, Brooke Lopez has been just incredible this season. It's really interesting. They've been bringing back, since they don't have Chris Middleton, they've been bringing back, like, the Brooklyn Nets, like, low post Brooke Lopez. You know, have you been seeing those possessions?
Yeah. and they work. They're
it's
good. Like
working
he's,
because I mean he still has that in him. It's not like that's gone away. He's just added to his game. So I want to say this with confidence. No dissing any other NBA big men, but I think of the non quote unquote all-star big men, like the guys we think of as all-stars, I think that Brook Lopez is the best non all-star big man in the league.
Easily. Honestly, I don't even think that's a competition. Because just think about it. Not only is his offensive output tremendous, like terrific, but he's like in talks for defensive player of the year. Like,
yeah,
no
it's
joke.
It's crazy that the Bucks have three defensive player of the year candidate level guys.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Holiday, Brook Lopez, and Giannis. But Ruff, if you want to move on to the next game, because
yeah,
we have
definitely.
So much
so,
to get from this one.
For sure. And this one, we're going to have to rely on you a lot, Brendan, because I wasn't actually able to catch this one. This is the Warriors playing the Grizzlies without Steph. This kind of reminds me of that game that the Warriors had a couple years ago when it was the Rockets versus the Warriors. And this was when there was no Klay, no Steph. Everyone thought this was going to be a complete blowout. And the Warriors ended up pulling off a miracle. So I'm not sure what it is with the Warriors and Christmas Day miracles, but they made it happen again, this time without Steph Curry against Memphis. So how do the Warriors pull this off, Brandon?
I'm not sure that it's Christmas Day miracles or it's the fact that there's something in the water at Chase Center, but they just don't like losing at home. We are 16-2 at home, and the road record is the exact opposite, 2-16.
Wow.
No Steph Curry, no Andrew Wiggins. I mean, there's no problem. Like, we were fire from three that day. Everyone was hitting their shots. You had Jordan Poole with 32. We had just a bunch of bench guys stepping up. And I have to say, Ty Jerome has been crazy for the Warriors. I saw a stat. He's averaging like close to 12 points per game in his past five games. And that was before today when he scored 17. And so he's just been solid for some reason. But yeah, Dante DiVincenzo has stepped it up. And I think that it's a possibility that the Steph Curry injury may have been a blessing in disguise to where the Warriors have been having so many problems with their bench unit coming in and struggling against other teams' bench units. And with Steph Curry out, these young guys have had to develop and learn to grow up right in the moment, right in the spotlight. And we've seen them grow up like right before my eyes in all these games.
I heard that Dante DiVincenzo also had a good game. He's a guy who's been underwhelming this season, but it seems like he had a good game.
Yeah. No, lately he's been like performing amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He's up to like 15, 20 points in his past few. I don't know if he played well the last game, but this tonight against the Jazz, he played very well also.
Okay. And so, Hunter, what did you see from the Memphis Grizzlies? Like, why were they underwhelming? Or was it just like the Warriors playing much better? You're frozen for a second, but you're back now.
Yeah. Okay, I'm back.
Did you hear the question?
I did not hear. What did Brandon
say? Okay, we were just talking about this Warriors Grizzlies game, and I was asking you why the Grizzlies lost. I mean, was it them being underwhelming, or was it just the Warriors playing much better?
Yeah, I honestly think the Warriors having their shots. I think when you have one team in general in the league, this can go for any team. When they're just really on and hitting their shots, like you can defend the perimeter, but if their shots are going in, they're going in. And if you aren't hitting at a clip like that and you're just taking normal possessions and the other team's playing pretty decent defense and getting back in transition, it's going to be very hard for you to win on any given night. And I give a lot of credit, I mean, like to the Warriors in general. But man, this Grizzlies team has been playing really well too. And I think it's just one of those games where it's like, due for a loss, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Every team's gonna be due for a loss, even if it's to a bad team. Some teams, like tonight, the Suns lost the Orlando Magic. Like every team, even no matter how good or bad they've been, they're gonna be due for a loss. And I think it was just that time for the Grizzlies. And also, no Desmond Bane in this game. Obviously, Desmond Bane does not negate the impact of Steph Curry and Andrew Wiggins, but you know, these games just happen. It's a long season, and definitely not a knock on the Warriors for this win or the Grizzlies, I think, for this loss. I just think course of the season happens. It's just one of those games where a team gets hot.
Yeah, I was just going to say about Brennan, before you add that, I also want you to mention, like, you brought up the Warriors' road record. Like, an abysmal 2-16. Like, what is their problem on the road, and like, what can they do to fix this? Because you can't be a successful team in this league by being terrible on the road.
I'm just gonna say this. Steve Kerr can't figure it out. I can't figure it out. I have no clue. Like, it's just sad to watch. I think our defense may be a huge factor. On the road, for some reason, we just seem to be like giving up way more runs and open looks in the from 3-point range, and transition opportunities for other teams. And I think that it's also just become like this thing, like as we get down on the road, it's just like, oh, here we go again. When that happens, like they just seem to kind of give up. And at home, we just seem to have this like different type of energy where we like want to win. So that seems like the case to me. And I also just want to say, Grizzlies were talking a lot of smack before that game. Warriors came out there, no Steph, no Wiggins, and we made a statement. Because that Grizzly team is talking about dynasty. No, they don't know anything about dynasty.
Yeah. I think it's pretty funny. Ja Morant had that interview where the interviewer asks him, he's like, who are you worried about in the West? And he's like, Celtics. And he's like, and she's like, oh, nobody in the West scares you? He's like, no, we're good in the West. And then
He's
they
not
come
ready.
out and
He's not
lose.
ready for it. I'm calling it. Warriors are the champs this year. I'm gonna say right now on this podcast.
Whoa. It's a bold prediction. I mean, right now they're, a 500 team, 10th in the West. You're gonna have to make it through the play-in first before
I
you.
will say, isn't it crazy that to be a 500 team in both conferences, you have to, or to be a top 10 team in both conferences, you have to be 500? I feel like that's a very high bar compared to the usual.
Oh, definitely. And honestly, I just want to say completely unrelated. The fact that I ever thought the Rockets were going to be a playoff team when
Yeah,
they're
Rafa,
consistently
like
the
2 years
worst team
ago,
in the
Rafa was like,
NBA.
the Rockets could be a playoff team.
That's easily like my worst take ever. Like, I just want to put that
When
out there.
the Jazz were like at the top early in the season, they just dropped.
Yeah, they're about a 500 team now.
That's re called regression to the mean.
Yeah.
They were never supposed to be that good.
Yeah.
But let's
We
keep
talked about
moving.
that.
Let's talk about some actual good teams in the West. The Nuggets and the Suns, who had like a crazy game, went to overtime. Nuggets won this one, and it was capped off by arguably the dunk of the year with Aaron Gordon rising up and just throwing down a monster jam in overtime. It was originally ruled a charge, but then it got overturned. And yeah, what'd you guys think of this game if you saw it?
Yeah, we got to watch the bare end of it because Brandon and I were actually in the car together while this game was going on. We were going to see some Christmas lights on Christmas night,
For
and
sure.
Brandon was like, "Oh crap, this is a close game, man. Let's tune in." We got to see the fourth quarter in overtime, and Brandon, I'll let you take it away.
I also want to add, we were in line at McDonald's. That's also very relevant to this story.
Yeah, 100%.
Just kidding. It has nothing to do with anything, but yeah, we tuned in at the right time. Like, game was close, and I just that dunk, like that has to be dunk of the year. I agree with you. And yeah, Aaron Gordon came in clutch for the Nuggets. I think that Jokic with the we had 41 41 point triple double that game, right?
Yeah, 41-point triple double.
Yeah.
It's crazy because he's another guy in MVP talks. Like, I feel like there's like 10 guys in MVP conversations.
Yeah. And so, I think they're definitely one of the top teams in the West. It's not anything crazy to say, but it's just a good close game. I don't have much to say besides that.
Yeah, I will say, isn't it weird that Landry Shamet had 31 points? Just like the bench put in so much work for them. And it is surprising this game was close considering Devin Booker only played 4 minutes. I think we have to emphasize that. I didn't actually see why he went out. I wasn't sure if it was injury or
He
ejection.
re-aggravated his an
It
injury.
was a re-aggravation.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it is very significant that they did not have their star. Chris Paul has looked, not, I wouldn't say has looked washed, but he's not looking like his former self. And the Suns are still able to come out and put up a really good fight against this Nuggets team. So I will say thank you, the Suns, for ending off Christmas Day with a really nice feather in the cap.
Yeah.
But we talked about this before, Rafa. We talked about how it's possible that people are going to start putting Aaron Gordon in that big three for the Nuggets over Michael Porter Jr., right? It's going to be Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, and Nikola Jokic. And after this game of Aaron Gordon having 28 points and 13 rebounds, capped off by that monster dunk, do you think that this is a valid claim?
I mean, as of right now, I'm going to say yes. I think that Aaron Gordon is a more important player to the Nuggets than Michael Porter Jr. is. I mean, Michael Porter Jr. has been pretty underwhelming this year, especially because literally his only job is to score the ball, and he's not even doing that great. He's been a very underwhelming this season. But Aaron Gordon has had, moments of brilliance. He's, a pretty good defender at this point in his career and really works within the Nuggets system. And he really just complements Murray and Jokic a lot more than Michael Porter Jr. does. If anything, Michael Porter Jr. is just taking the ball away from guys who need it more. And so, yeah, I mean, I would say that's pretty valid at this point.
Do you think the Nuggets might regret having signed Michael Porter Jr. into the large contract when it's all said and done?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously, like he might not develop into the player that you want him to be, but like it was the right deal at the time. He looked like an incredible scorer, and he still is very young. He has a lot of time to develop, and he does have moments where like he'll just like go on a crazy scoring stretch by himself, and he has that potential to be a KD-esque level scorer, where just he can score all three levels effortless, and nobody can guard him because he can just
I see
shoot
him
from
more
anywhere.
like a taller Chris Middleton.
Interesting. I mean, or go ahead.
I wanted to say that I think that Michael Porter Jr. is definitely that third option, for Nuggets and not Aaron Gordon. I think that Aaron Gordon's played amazing early on this season, but I think that as a shooter, we've seen plenty of shooters go through slumps like this, and you're going to go through, longer slumps, shorter slumps. This one might be a little bit longer to start the season. I know he was injured last season, didn't play many games, but. He's just getting back into rhythm. And I think that Michael Porter Jr., when he does get back to his normal self, because I believe that he will be a much more important option for the Nuggets. And especially when it comes to the playoffs, because as we saw last season, the Warriors were able to expose the Aaron Gordon from the 3-point line, and he was like not able to hit those shots, and it became like a very obvious weak point in their offense. So I need to point that out as well.
Yeah, well, thanks for having an opposing position because oftentimes Raf and I are on the pod and we're like, yeah, we agree. And
Yeah,
next
I
topic.
mean,
So,
phenomenal basketball minds think alike,
yeah, and obviously very inferior basketball minds think differently.
Of
So,
course.
all you listeners who disagree with us, who think Michael Porter Jr. should be the third option,
And he does come. You're not welcome back.
In terms of, I'll say this about Brandon's take. Like, in terms of third option on offense, sure, you want to have Michael Porter Jr. have the ball, but I'm saying like if you're ranking players in terms of importance to the Nuggets, obviously one's Jokic, two is Murray, and I would say three is honestly Aaron Gordon at this point.
It's close. It's close.
It is
It's not
close.
like clear cut.
Yeah, I'm
I'm
just saying.
saying clear cut Michael Porter Jr.
He's going double down.
Close. Nah, but I think it's Michael Porter Jr.
I just
Yeah.
think it's hilarious. Also, one thing about Michael Porter Jr. This is a guy who has so much talent, but you can tell he just doesn't put a lot of effort into basketball. Because as a guy who's literally 7 foot, he averages like six rebounds. And like he could easily average 8 to 9 if he just put in more effort, especially on the offensive glass. And like his defense is terrible. Like he's genuinely a
Not a high
horrible
effort
defender.
basketball player.
Huh?
He's definitely not a high effort basketball player.
100% not. Yeah, so I mean that is, but you see Aaron Gordon, he's hustling out there night in, night out, and I'll take that any day over a guy who has more talent, you know what I'm saying?
For sure. I wanted to get into this next little segment about injuries. And we already talked about the Steph Curry injury. He should be coming back in 2 weeks, hopefully. And we talked about the Warriors' woes. So I want to move on and talk about this Miami Heat team. Fortunately, we're going to talk about them from a positive side of this injury issue. They were very injured in the past, like since the start of the season, and they finally have most of their guys back. I mean, they have a few guys day to day, but they have their important pieces: Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero, Max Strus, Gabe Vincent. All these guys are here again, and they're looking pretty good. above 500 again. And I'll start with you, Brandon. Do you think that we need to still be worrying about this Heat team from a long-term perspective, from a playoff perspective, or do you think this is a season to ride out?
No, there's too many good teams in the East. I think that this the Heat, not the Sixers. I think that the Heat, they have their they had their run against the Lakers in the bubble. I think that was their opportunity, or as close as the opportunity that they were gonna get with this core team. And I think that Jimmy Butler is a great player, but they just don't have, like I was saying, that clear star for them in the playoffs. You have the Nets, you got the Celtics, you got the Bucks, and I think those are my top three in the East, and no one's touching them in the playoffs.
Rafa, do you have any opinions on that?
I mean, any team with Jimmy Butler, like, obviously has chances to go far, and Bam has played great as of late. And so I wouldn't fully count out this Heat team, but I think changes do need to be made. I think a team that is relying heavily on, like, Tyler Hero to create offense is, I don't know how far that's going to take you. And, a lot of the players that they were sort of banking on to make it big, like Duncan Robinson, as we talked about, have really been underwhelming and sort of fizzled out. And so, they're playing guys like Caleb Martin and Max Strus, like big minutes. And while these are not bad players, and in fact, I think Max Strus is actually pretty good, like, is it really going to make you competitive against a team like Milwaukee or even Brooklyn? I mean, I want to talk about Brooklyn soon, but I think they need more. I think, they have the two pieces. Kyle Lowry is just not that third star anymore. He's not the same player he used to be. And so I think there's a package there somewhere that you could get a disgruntled kind of star. Like we might, okay, let me float this idea out, right? What if the Heat managed to package together some of the younger players, right? Maybe a big deal and land a disgruntled star like Trae Young, who we've here heard a lot of rumors about him, not being happy in Atlanta. What would Trae Young do on this Miami Heat team with Jimmy Butler and Bam?
Brandon, do you want to answer that question first, or do you want me
Yeah, I guess I could answer it first.
to? Go ahead.
I think that that would drastically improve the team, having a guy like Trae Young. I think that it could go one of two ways. It could go really bad or really good, because I think that both Jimmy Butler and Trae Young are pretty ball dominant players. I think that's fair to say. So they'd have to learn to work off ball. But I do think that Trae Young loves his lob threats, and I think that Adebayo is like an amazing pick and roll type thing, and that'll be really like that'll be awesome to watch, like a Trae Young Adebayo little like pick and roll duo, and I think that would be pretty like scary to see. And then Jimmy Butler, I just I don't how would Jimmy Butler and Trae Young work together? I don't see it. Seems like Hunter's
Oh,
frozen.
he's frozen again. Oh man. I thought he was just really thinking really intently about your question. So,
Was thinking that too. I was like, damn, he's like deep.
I
Hello? Okay,
was
can
like,
you guys hear me again?
yeah.
Okay.
So what are your thoughts, Hunter?
My internet is not having some fun right now, but
Same
it's crazy
internet.
because you and Brandon are on the same I
internet.
know, I don't understand what's happening. But
Right below
no,
me.
I actually happen to tend to disagree with Brandon on this one. For one, I disagree on everything. I don't think that Trae Young would work great in this team. Not for on-court reasons, but off-court reasons. And I also think that on paper, Jimmy Butler and Trae Young are a great fit together because Jimmy Butler is exactly the opposite of what Brandon said. I think Jimmy Butler isn't ball dominant. I think Jimmy Butler takes the ball in his hands when he needs to, because he doesn't have anybody to do it for him. But during the regular season, he's definitely not the type of guy who's going to put the ball in his hands. If anything, I see the Heat run more through Kyle Lowry, and Jimmy Butler is pulling up and taking late shots on the clock from mid-range because that's their only offensive option. But what I do see from the idea of Trae Young, I don't love, because Miami is in a very intense work ethic, very driven culture. And I don't see Trae Young fitting in with that dog mentality that they have over there. And I mean, Fran's already been having problems with Nate McMillan and like practice issues. And like, I know the biggest deal was like Trae Young was slightly injured or aggravated an injury, and he didn't come to practice one day. So Nate McMillan got angry with him over that, or like there was some scuffle and he wanted Trae to come to practice, but he didn't. And he said, okay, either come off the bench tonight or you're not going to show up to the arena. And Trae Young just didn't show up and he didn't play the game, even though he very well could have. And I think that thing, that sort of thing, does not fly with Pat Riley. And I don't think that flies with Eric Spoelstra. And I don't think that flies with Jimmy Butler. So this culture is very intense. It's very work heavy and it's an underdog style. And I think Trae Young has been like the alpha his whole life when it comes to basketball. I just don't think he has that type of dog in him to play in Miami.
I also want to ask a little hypothetical question.
Go
So
ahead.
let's say that they were to be on the same team, right? And you got late game, fourth quarter, game on the line. Who would be taking that shot? You got Ice Trae or you got Jimmy Butler?
A trick question. I want Bam for three.
Oh my God.
No, I'm kidding. I would definitely want Jimmy Butler. I think Jimmy Butler proven time and time again how clutch he is in the playoffs. Obviously, if you need a three, you want Trae Young taking this, but
Yeah,
I
but if you
think,
can get to the basket, definitely
yeah,
Butler.
easily. But the thing is, like, that's the thing. Like, Trae Young would just have so much gravity on that team. Like, teams have to respect him not only from deep, but also like driving to the rim because Trae Young draws his fouls, he gets to the rim. He has a great floater too,
Yeah,
so like
but I think another thing in that issue with having Trae Young in that Miami team is, yes, they have Kyle Lowry. He's getting older. He's probably not going to be there next season. Or in the next few seasons. I think, actually, sorry, he is there next season. He's still on contract. But the year after that, he's not going to be there. And he's getting older. And you have a lot of guys who are defensively deficient in Duncan Robinson, who's on a long-term deal, in Tyler Hero. And I think adding Trae Young would severely weaken their defensive capability. And even with that heat zone that they run, and they're very good at, I think there would be so many more weak points in their defense if they had a guy like Trae Young. Even if it would provide that much more offense.
Well, I hypothetically in this trade, you're getting rid of a guy like Duncan Robinson, and you're shipping out. Maybe Tyler Hero goes in this trade too. And like they already like the Heat have already accepted they're gonna have weaknesses with their defense, and they're sacrificing that for their offense. Like that's why they give Tyler Hero big minutes. I guess they've made some compromises by playing Duncan Robinson less, playing Max Strus a lot more. But like Trae Young, he's the guy whose offensive output far outweighs whatever defensive deficiencies he has.
And also want to say that I feel like I am so like damn tired of this same Miami team going in every season, and it's like sort of the same story. It's like, will they emerge with this Jimmy Butler in the playoffs? And they don't really go that far. Like they've
I
gone.
mean, dude, that's not true. They were one shot away from beating the Celtics,
Yeah,
dude.
they were one shot
They
away
were
from playing the Warriors.
one shot away from being a Celtics who beat a sort of injured Milwaukee team, right? So I feel like Milwaukee even could have gone through. I don't think they would have beat Milwaukee. And I also think that they would not have beat the Warriors in that finals.
Oh, regardless, you're still talking about a team that was one win or
They've
one
never.
shot away from a Eastern Conference Finals appearance. So we're not talking about like some scrub team.
It may just be a me thing, but I feel like they're just such a boring team to watch too. Like I just need something different.
I enjoy watching the Heat. I think they
Young
do.
would be great over there.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, but I like if you just look in terms of like what they've done in the past 3 years, 2020 made the finals. 2021, sure, that was a disappointing season, get swept by the Bucks. Then 2022, make it to the conference finals, as Hunter said, one shot away from making it to the finals and playing the Warriors. And who knows how that series would have gone.
Yeah.
But
Would have lost
yeah,
percent.
they
But Kyle,
probably.
I will say,
Yeah.
I'm ready to move on to some Lakers talk. I want to keep
Sure.
it short
Yeah, we can be
because
brief.
we talk about the Lakers a lot and they're disappointing and there's no reason to talk about them if we weren't Laker fans. But we're on this injury topic. So Anthony Davis goes out with a stress fracture in his foot. And he's going to be out estimated a month from the start of his injury, so maybe 2 to 3 weeks now. And they're after tonight, 7 games back from 500, a record of 14 and 21 at the 13th seed in the West, very far back from even in the play-in picture. I mean, we're talking a team so bad that they are two games behind the Oklahoma City Thunder without Chet Holmgren. All they have is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. We're talking Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Alexei Pokushevsky are beating LeBron James, Anthony Davis for half of the season, and Russell Westbrook. So, you know,
man.
It's what it is. But I do want to highlight Russ had a triple-double off the bench last game, which ties most triple-doubles off the bench of all time in three. But that's still very impressive. Coming off the bench, don't care how many minutes he's playing, triple-double's a triple-double, and this
yeah.
is just a machine.
Well, okay, actually, that was 2 games ago because they were the Lakers played tonight and they lost.
Technically, they played tonight, so 2 games ago.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, what more is there to say about the Lakers? They suck. Like, they just suck, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, they're riddled with injuries. The future is looking bleak in LA because obviously they don't have their pick this year, so they can't even tank to get Victor Wembanyama because that would make Victor Wembanyama a New Orleans Pelican.
Bro, so, no protections on their picks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka.
Yeah. Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss need to be investigated by the Federal Bureau of Investigations for serious, like, just seeing how good LeBron is playing and then just knowing, like, this is all being wasted away by incompetent management is so disheartening.
You also have to know LeBron's in on the management too, but
okay, true, but like, they, like, what has the front office done to actually give him like a good team?
Nothing.
Exactly.
They've thrown away the only good team he had on this Lakers team.
That's what I'm saying. They threw it all away. So
championship lineup.
They literally traded away our entire championship lineup to get Montrezl Harrell. We had Montrezl Harrell for some reason, and then Russell Westbrook eventually.
And then, hey, Dennis Schroeder twice.
Oh, yeah, dude. Can you imagine if we still had Dennis Schroeder locked up on a deal for 5 years? $100 million.
I would have to stop watching the NBA at that point. It would be a little too much for me.
Wait, for some reason, Dennis Schroeder went from like a good like sixth man of the year candidate to like NBA journeyman in 2 years.
Did you see his air ball tonight?
Yes.
Oh my, that's one of the worst shots I've ever seen in my
Wait,
life.
I think it was like 8 feet short, they said. 8 feet.
What?
Halfway to the basket. He shot his shot and it didn't even get halfway. No one blocked it or anything.
He was wide open.
Was it a 3-point shot?
Like, it
was
literally got like halfway to the basket.
I don't believe this.
We'll send it to you after, but like, it's absurd.
Something.
No one blocked it. They were like, I don't think there's a block. I don't know what happened.
Everyone was flabbergasted by that.
No, but anyway, we can
move on
to a team.
I'm sorry. I'm just, you guys got to wait until the end of the decade because you guys like less of the Lakers do. They win every start of the decade. So you got to wait
this
seven.
Is true. We have to wait to 2030.
2032 champions. Here we go. Oh, wait, no, just 2030.
I will say, I do want to talk about a team that was compared to the Lakers a lot, but definitely turned it around in the Brooklyn Nets. I'm ready to talk about this team. They are 22-7 since Jackie Vaughn took over as the
Jacques head coach. Jacques Vaughn.
Oh my God. Why do I keep wanting to come? I did this last time too. Yes, it's the French. Jacques Vaughn took over, and that is the best record any team has had in that time span. And they are now on a 10-game win streak, won their past 10 against good teams and bad teams, you know, just doing their thing. Kevin Durant has been incredible, the most efficient season of his career, and he's taken hard shots. Paolo Banchero went on a podcast and talked about this. We can talk about it a little more later. But just KD looking great. Kyrie has come back and looked very good as well. We've talked about the Nets a lot in the past, but is this finally their year?
It might be, honestly. Like, I don't think I've ever seen the Nets this well-rounded. I mean, they just, like, are doing it all. KD is playing at an MVP level. Kyrie is looking insane. I mean, literally just do yourselves all a favor. Look up his highlights today against the Atlanta Hawks. Like, he was going crazy. Just the most ridiculous scoring you've seen in a long time. Just like all sorts of dribble moves. Like, his bag is so deep And just like he's so effortless with the scoring. And then KD, obviously, like, there's what can you do to stop him? And I think the difference between this Nets team and previous Nets teams is Ben Simmons, because we make fun of him a lot, but he really has changed the defense on this team. Like, the Nets have actually been a very, very solid defensive team. Dare I say, a good defensive team, a very good defensive team.
Yeah, I think we also can't underrate how much Kevin Durant has also become a defender, surprisingly.
Yeah, the
Just
number
using his length to bother people.
eight in points allowed. That's actually better than I thought. I was just looking it up right now, but I'm gonna go ahead and say this right now also. I think the Nets are going to the finals. They're coming out of the East. It is my pick. No one is stopping Kevin Durant in the playoffs. I don't care about Giannis. I don't care about no Jason Tatum.
What about
Kate,
last year?
what do you mean, what about last year? There
Like
was no.
they were very clearly, that was like the whole narrative that no one could stop him. And Kevin Durant was very clearly stopped by the Celtics.
Kyrie was there. There's a Seth Curry now.
Seth Curry was also there.
No,
He
not
was
last year.
not last year. No, he was on the Sixers.
Oh, but yeah, what am I saying?
Yeah. I don't know, man. I got strong feelings about this, gut feeling. Come playoff time, KD, you already saw him last year go crazy. I think that's go to finals.
That's just, I wouldn't say an outlandish take. That's definitely a bold take, because I think the East is just strong in general. This East is definitely stronger than this West. But I think I want to give a lot of credit, like you said, Rafa, to Ben Simmons. He's been great. I mean, like, he's averaging 8, 7, and 6, but I don't think his stats really tell the story. I mean, like, we can clown him for not shooting the ball, and he's never going to be, I think, the all-star Ben Simmons we thought he could, was going to be for his career. But if he ends up being a really like lock-in defensive player kind of guy, and he provides at least like something on offense, maybe some facilitation, a few points here and there, he's still like a useful player. We can't talk about him as like this useless garbage time player. Like, I think him and Russell Westbrook like were both very clowned to start the season as like useless, like stupid players. But I think they've both redeemed themselves in their own ways. I think that you can compare that very well. Another guy I want to give credit to is Yuta Watanabe.
Yeah, it's got a good
He
idea.
came into this year, like I just was he on the Wizards or where was he?
I think it was with the Raptors, right?
Yeah, I think it was the Raptors. I knew it was a team that was like red. But yeah, he just changed up his shot, and he's just been a sharpshooter, just killer for them. And that just the Nets need those guys, and he's on the tall side. I think he's 6'8". So surrounding Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving with shooters has really been great for them. Like as you'd expect. But this team's up to second in the East. And I think they're gonna continue this tear. I mean, I don't think they're gonna, go on some like crazy streak, become the number one team by far. But I do think that this is a team that is not meant to be toyed with. And Brandon could very well be right. They could be in the finals.
I mean, he's got, what do we see with OKC went to the finals? I'm trying to think if the teams are somewhat similar. I mean, he has his all-star point guard. He's got, what did you have? The Steven Adams. Who's the comparison for that?
Nick Claxton, and he's been playing solid.
Yeah, Nick Claxton is also another guy who's been really solid for them. I do want to ask another question. I'll start with Brandon, and then I'll go to you, Rafa. Do you think if Kevin Durant were to win an NBA championship with the Nets and become Finals MVP, not even necessarily become Finals MVP, but if he just had a good playoff series and won with this Nets team, that people would change the way they look at him as a winner and as a player in NBA history?
Now, I thought you were asking about like him being top 10.
No,
Said
but
no way. No way. Absolutely
a
not.
lot of people
There are
put
some lists where he is like 15 to like up to 8, I've seen.
eight
That's
is insane. Eight is
I think
absurd.
you can call him
I think 8
maybe
is insane. I
20.
do think 8 is insane, but people have him in that range, and I think
No,
that.
Brent, my question to you though is, do you think people are going to change the narrative about him? Because a lot of people have seen him as a loser in his career for just making super teams, going to the Warriors, and then going to the Nets to make his perfect team with Kyrie, and then James Harden joins, and that fails.
I think the KD hate has somewhat died down a little bit since his stint with the Warriors, but
I wouldn't say that. I think it died down after James Harden left.
I think that he's been able to stick it through with them, and obviously he had that incredible performance. Was he how long is his contract? Did he re-sign this year?
I think he has 3 or 4 years left in this deal.
So he's stuck on the contract, right?
Yeah. And he can't even trade. That's because we saw what happened when he tried to request a trade. Okay.
So I think that also means that, like, he doesn't even have the option to leave if he wants to. I think that in a situation where he didn't like it, he probably would leave. I think that once someone who's just chasing the wind is always going to be something like someone like that. So my perspective on him doesn't change. He's still an incredible player, but he's always going to have that sort of asterisk. How do you say it? Asterisk on himself, just for always trying to chase the winds and not really do it homegrown and in a city and see it through, see the process through.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Brandon. Like, I think that, you know, there's always going to be an asterisk attached to KD's name because he's won the two of the easiest chips in NBA history. I mean, that 2017 Cavs team, sure, it was good, but it was such a stacked team that the Warriors had. Like, it's universally known that was a super team. And then 2018, the most lopsided finals in NBA history. Like, yeah. Such a joke of a championship.
I think that people consider, I think, the team that, quote, broke the league, quote unquote, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that 2019 team could have easily beat the Raptors like 4-1 if they were fully healthy.
Yeah, that was a team that people forget. Boogie Cousins was on the team, and this was still when Boogie Cousins is like an all-star caliber player.
He was an all-star caliber. This is like following his injury.
That's
like,
not true, Brandon. He had his first injury, but that was coming off the Pelicans, where he was an all-star player, a superstar player,
all-star caliber. I'm telling you right now, he was averaging like maybe 10 points. Like,
no, whatever. Before he got to the Warriors, Brandon.
Yeah, I'm saying. On the Warriors, he was not that same.
Yeah, okay, yeah, of on course the Warriors. Not.
But when he signed, people were like, oh crap, this is a literal 30-10 guy who's joining a super team.
Yeah, like the league
is
over.
That was the craziest signing ever. Happily, my God. You had Steph, Clay, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, if DeMarcus Cousins ended up being healthy, like if he didn't re-injure himself and ended up being real DeMarcus Cousins, that would have been the best team of all time.
Like a 2K, like my league.
No, that's like literally the Olympic team. Like,
honestly, yeah, All-American too.
Yeah.
Wait, I want to say one thing about this Nets team, though. Isn't that kind of crazy? You see how good James Harden's playing? Like, imagine this Nets team with, like, no Simmons and James Harden. I mean, how important do you think Simmons is to this team? Like, if you replaced him with James Harden, do you think they'd get a lot of
as successful?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Then that's a
I think it, I think this was a win-win for the Sixers and the Nets, which was surprising because it seemed so lopsided at the time. But James Harden has really provided so much offense and a needed, I guess, like, focal point so Joel Embiid can relax a little bit. And I think that Ben Simmons has brought a defensive presence and a body to a team that already has enough ISO guys.
That's true. I guess we could keep going. Talk about Luka for a little bit. So Luka, you know, broke some records the other day against the New York Knicks. 60, 21, and 10 in an OT win against the Knicks, including that game was insane. The Mavericks ended up scoring 9 points in 30 seconds to get it to OT, including like a crazy play where, you know, Luka missed a free throw, somehow got it back, shot it in midair to send it to overtime. It was a ridiculous ending to that game. In an absurd stat line. So obviously we all know how insane the stat line is. We all know how good Luke is. Another guy in MVP talks, by the way, if we just want to keep going through him. But I wanted to bring this up as the debate topic. So the only other player in NBA history to have a 60-point triple-double was James Harden, who, by the way, did it in three quarters, which is insane. And so who would you rather have? prime James Harden or current Luka Doncic?
Right.
First.
I like current Luka Doncic not only because he's younger, but because I just feel like he's got a much better vibe around him, just from a team perspective standpoint. Like even off the court, like you just see these videos of just the great team bonding. And I think that James Harden really isn't that same type of personality that Luka is, that really allows the team to just gel so well off the court. And yeah, I feel like he's just got a lot more time, and the Mavericks organization hasn't done the best job putting better pieces around him. I feel like that you have such a generational talent, and he's like struggling. You see clips of him just yelling at these guys, like he seems helpless almost.
What do you think, Hunter? You agree?
Yeah, I'm trying to think in like his best season, which was 2018, 2019. James Harden did have Chris Paul. He had PJ Tucker. Like he'd go to role players around him, and he's played with a lot of good talent. I'm trying to think, what other all-stars has James Harden played with in Houston?
Westbrook.
No, before Westbrook, like maybe pre-Chris Paul. He had Dwight Howard. He
Well,
had
no, Dwight Howard was before he like exploded. He was still good, but it was before like his 36 whatever.
Yeah, I mean that's not James Harden I'm talking about. I'm talking about James Harden in his prime when he was averaging 36 every season, you know?
Yeah, I'm just looking at efficiency right now,
It's about
and
the same.
it's right around the same. James Harden had a few more turnovers a game.
You know what's crazy to me is actually how similar their stat lines are. Through every single stat, it's like within like one or two, every single one. I think like rebounds and assists are all right there. That's
Efficiency.
crazy.
The difference is the 3-point attempts per game. James Harden has almost double him.
I'm sure he's way up,
But
but
that's the difference in the points. As you see, like it's 3 or 4 more points a game. That's a difference in the amount of threes they're taking. So, man, it's really close, but I'm going to slightly edge out a prime James Harden as of right now.
Okay,
Very,
just
very slightly.
justify it, justify it.
I think that Luka Doncic is a better just overall player, but I think a prime James Harden, like that stretch where he had those 30-point games for like, what was it, like 20 something games in a row, beat Kobe's record for that, whatever it was, is just a ridiculous stat.
I want to ask a question. Sorry.
Oh, sorry, one more thing. This was when he led his team to the one seed, I believe, over the Golden State Warriors that season.
2018.
Or it was the 2018-2019 season.
2018 was with Chris Paul.
No,
It was with Paul.
2018 is the season you're thinking of, Hunter, because I think that's the season that
Or
Harden won his
James Harden, I
MVP.
don't know. They were not the first seed.
Okay, whatever it was, but they were either one or two seed.
No, in 2018, they were the one seed. James
No,
Harden won his MVP.
that was look at his season with when he averaged 36.
That's 2019.
No, it's not. No, it's definitely not. It's like 2017.
No, I'm looking right now. It's 2018, 2019, the average 36.
2016, 2017 was the Westbrook MVP season, right?
It's
Yeah.
2018, 2019.
No, 2017, 2018.
Brent, I'm looking at the stats right now.
He was MVP 2017, 2018.
Okay, regardless, whatever it is, what I'm saying is I think it matters that you lead your team to wins, and obviously that your general team, like who's around you, matters. But I'm just going to slightly edge out James Harden right now, farther into his career, more developed. I think when it's all said and done, there's no question in my mind Luka Doncic edges James Harden by a lot. But I'm just going to give this very slight edge to James Harden in his prime. Because I mean, Luka's not even there yet, which is crazy to think about.
23 years old.
I want to say this about the whole Luka Doncic James Harden comparison. I think there's two things you guys have neglected to sort of mention. One is that Luka Doncic is playing in a time where the refs are not as generous with the fouls that they're giving. We know James Harden in his prime was a guy who lived at the line. And while, yes, Luka does get a lot of foul calls, like in a 60-point game, I think he had 22 free throws. I don't know if that was made or attempted, but I remember seeing that stat line. But like, you know that James Harden was notorious for like wrapping his arms around someone, getting to the line, or just like doing this thing where he'll step back three, kick out his feet, and get three free throws if they
Rafa, the shot is going. I will tell you, at most in his career, James Harden averaged 11 free throws a game, and right now Luka's averaging 10.7 a game.
Okay, so even that is a little bit comparable. So, okay, fair enough. I guess one thing that you can't discredit, playoff performances, because from what we've seen from Luka Doncic throughout his whole playoff career, unbelievable in the playoffs. He's, if anything, he elevates his game. We know that buzzer beater he has had against the Clippers. We saw him lead his team to the Western Conference Finals. I don't think we've seen anything like that from James Harden, even in his prime. I think that's a guy who always his performances decrease and he shrinks in the spotlight, whereas Luka Doncic seems to elevate when given that set stage to play on. So
sure. I think Doncic is definitely more unstoppable.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And also just like as a player, I think like Luka Doncic is just so much more creative as like a post scorer. Like he has such great footwork. You'll just see a shot from him. You're like, how the hell did he make that? Whereas James Harden is a guy who plays like a little bit more textbook. He's unstoppable too, but like he's not as, I guess, as creative or as like inventive as a scorer.
I just have to say, like, James Harden is one of the greats, but Luka Doncic is generational. Like, not going to see anything like this, man.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. All right, so I guess we can move on. That was a good discussion right there. This is just some random news. I just want to get your guys' brief opinions on this, and then one more question. We'll be out of here. So the NBA ended up renaming a bunch of their major awards. So the MVP is now the Michael Jordan Trophy, Defensive Player of the Year, Hakeem Olajuwon Trophy, Rookie of the Year's Wilt Chamberlain Trophy, Sixth Man of the Year, the John Havlicek Trophy, Most Improved, the George Mikan Trophy. First of all, what do you guys think of that? Like those trophy names, anything you disagree with, or does it kind of make sense?
They went way too classic with it. That is my opinion. I think that they should have went way more recent. That would have been way more cool for NBA fans of today. Like who's supporting a George Mikan Trophy? Like, okay.
Yeah, we need the Jordan Poole Trophy.
Jordan Poole, no. But I feel like Kobe Bryant definitely should have made his way into one of those trophies. I feel like not a rookie of the year.
Kobe's already the All-Star MVP trophy name.
Okay, I feel like that could went to Shaq. I feel like Shaq would have been a good All-Star MVP trophy. And I feel like Kobe would have been a good
Most Improved.
I don't know about Most Improved either.
Why? Because Kobe went from basically doing nothing at the start of his career to like
he was still like pretty highly recruited, I feel.
The one I want to talk about is I think Sixth Man of the Year award probably should have been gone to Jamal Crawford.
More than John Havlicek?
Yeah. I mean, John Havlicek wasn't he a starter?
I don't know. I didn't watch him.
Sure John Havlicek was a starter.
Fantastic. We need more recent players on this.
Back in my day, John Havlicek.
Let me look this up.
I think finals MVP 100% should have been Michael Jordan. What, 6 for 6. You can, like, hunt, like that is the Michael Jordan trophy right there. Finals MVP. And what was he? He's the MVP trophy?
Yeah. I'm not mad at that.
Okay. For the first 7 years of his 13-year career, he was a sixth man, earning 4 All-Stars in his time as a sixth man. Right?
You can't argue with that.
What?
You can't argue with that.
You can't argue with that, but I think Jamal Crawford is the first person I think when I think of the ideal sixth man.
Well, yeah, that's because you are like living in modern, you know.
No, but he's not even that modern. That's like 2000s or 90s, even like late 90s to 2000s basketball.
Magic Johnson as the Rookie of the Year trophy.
Didn't he get the Western or the Western?
Yeah, he got the Western Conference. But they're running out of players. That's kind
of we talked about this, Rafa. They're adding way too many awards in there to the NBA. Speaking of which, Speaking of which, the new award, another new award for some reason. They're adding it participation trophies now. The Clutch Player of the Year, which is the Jerry West Trophy, which is a fitting name considering that Jerry West was a very clutch player back in his day.
That's going to go to either Lillard or Shea.
No. I actually have a good pick for this. And you guys wouldn't expect this, but I think this should go to DeMar DeRozan. I think he...
This year?
Yes. Okay. Look at the stats. Guess who leads the league in fourth quarter scoring and clutch scoring?
Actually, I gotta say this. It was Steph Curry before we got injured. I know that for a fact.
I think you're making the case for like a guy like Damian Lillard or a guy like Shea, that's just based off like the name value. I don't think they've actually been all that clutch this year. I think DeMar, I mean, sure, Lillard's going to be in that conversation, but I think DeMar should take this one as of right now.
I mean, and then you got to see, like, the amount of game-tying, game-winning shots that Shea's hit this season. Like, I've never seen anything like that. I have, like, you just go on Instagram, like, every other day, and Shea's hitting, like, this insane shot to put him to tie the game, and then they end up losing, of course, because you look at the record, but...
Yeah, he was hot to start the season, but I mean, I think DeMar's just been doing it more.
My pick is actually Kyrie Irving.
I'm not mad at that.
Because when you look at games played compared to fourth quarter scoring, he is the second highest on the list of points per game in the fourth quarter.
Who's number one?
Giannis.
Oh, shit.
Number three is LeBron. Number four, Jason Tatum.
Okay, I was thinking of, clutch scoring. If you look at clutch scoring.
This is fourth quarter. Okay. But DeMar is at six. He's not far down the list.
I feel like fourth quarter is also a little bit skewed because players play different minutes. I think clutch scoring is probably the better one to look at.
Yeah, that's true. Kyrie Irving has on eight minutes per game, which is the least of all the guys up here. He's averaging 9.1 points in 8 minutes a game. So he's averaging more points than minutes in the fourth quarter. So my pick is probably Kyrie Irving, but I think it's a toss-up.
Yeah, I'm not mad at that. I mean,
this trophy holds much value. It's just like it's not going to be like in that argument, like in comparing these players, like, oh, he won the Clutch Player of the Year.
Hey, finally,
I think this will determine NBA players' ranking all time.
Maybe Damian Lillard can finally win a trophy. You know what I'm saying?
Brother is not gonna like that one.
He's gonna, you know, that meme of like the Timberwolves after they won the playoff game or the play-in game, and they like Pat Bev is like throwing his jersey to the stands, jumping on the thing. That's gonna be Dame Lillard when he wins the when he wins the Jerry West Clutch Player of the Year award. It's like crying to his fans, like,
finally getting his flowers.
At least he's got a gold medal. At least he's got something.
Yeah, he's got something.
All right, you guys. Well,
last question.
I was going to say, I want to wrap this up on a fun little question here. Game on the line, all right? We're talking about clutch time right now. Who do you want taking your three-point shot to end your game? Brandon, no bias in this one, okay? Damian Lillard, Klay Thompson, Reggie Miller, or Ray Allen?
Why is Steph Curry not there?
It's because this is like, it was surrounding a conversation of like the second best shooter of all time. Like, because Steph Curry is like number one. Just answer the question. Why are you bringing Steph into this?
Because I'm like, why is he not there?
Okay, but anyway, just answer with the names presented.
I mean, dude, Ray Allen hit like arguably the clutchest shot in NBA history. So there's that.
Yeah.
I think it's between, oh God, Reggie Miller is also so clutch though. He's had such big shot. Who's Klay Thompson? I think as a Warriors fan, I think Klay Thompson is out of that conversation.
I agree with you.
Agreed.
It's tough. Damian Lillard hit like five threes to keep bringing the Blazers back in that Nuggets game. I think was that the season the Lakers lost in that like that first round.
I guess the Suns.
That came to memory, but
thanks for that. That was totally unnecessary, but
I mean, also the shot against OKC.
The OKC shot, he's had I think two 3-pointers that
the really
like,
old buzzer beater. Was it like over Kobe or like You know the one where he was really young in his career with when like a LaMarcus Aldridge was still in the Blazers.
Yeah,
Did the
Damian
running
Lillard's
three.
definitely, he's got the made for it.
He's got a lot of clutch threes in his career as well, but
Ah, man. I think it's a toss up for me between Damian Lillard and Ray Allen.
Rafa.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to for me is like, is this going to be a catch and shoot situation, or is it like I need him to create a shot and 3-point to win the game? Because if it's the first where it's just a catch and shoot, I want Ray Allen, so many clutch shots. Obviously, that game six Miami Heat against San Antonio Spurs literally saved the finals for them and won them a championship in 2013. Also, he's had a lot of other clutch shots, not as flashy, but like definitely some that I remember against the Celtics, stuff like that. And so he's super clutch, but not really kind of a shot creator kind of guy, at least like later in his career. Damian Lillard, we see what he can do. He can make that something out of nothing. I want the ball in his hands. If it's just like create a shot, I need a three. But that's sort of the criteria I'll give it to. But I
Yeah,
agree with you guys.
I think we're sort of all in the same boat, but I'm probably going to take Dame overall just because I think he can still do the catch and shoot, but he can also create a shot off the dribble if he needs to.
Fair enough.
But
And this is why Dame will win the Clutch Player of the Year award.
the thing is, like, I didn't get to watch Ray Allen 2, so I don't know if he had as many moments.
he does.
I
He
know we're
has.
trying to. I know we're
All
trying
time, I think he has the second most clutch shots made in NBA history.
Okay, so there's that. But I just think that getting to watch Damian Lillard live as a clutch player, he just, like, every time I watch him, and like once it gets to fourth quarter, 5 minutes left, 5 minutes left, like I just expect this dude to hit every single shot he hits. Like, it's just gotten to that point to it's like this dude is not missing, and it's not surprising when he doesn't.
No,
That's
yeah,
just
it's absurd. All right,
with
man.
the well, great having. Oh, did you want to add something else?
Yeah, I just want to say, like, the old head NBA fans are gonna be like, I want Moses Malone taking this shot. Hey, what you know about Moses Malone?
There's a reason it's called the Jerry West Award. Why is he on this?
Bob Pettit. What do you guys know about?
Yeah, Bob Pettit. Oh, he could stroke that thing.
Anyways, that's a great note to end this
Was
episode
no
on.
3-point line back then, though. He was probably like doing something in the post, or I don't even know.
Don't know, man.
This
All
man could really shoot back in my day, all the way out from
right,
12 feet.
well, literally. All right, well, it was a pleasure having you on, Brandon. Thanks for coming on.
It.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the pod.
And thank you
And
all so much for listening.
had a lot of fun.
It's gonna be next episode is gonna be in the new year. It's a great year for Time Out Talk 2022. Big things.
Brandon,
And
you were the last episode of the year. That was
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Here's
Closing
to
out
a here's to a
the year
great.
strong. Closing out the year strong.
Exactly. Here's to a great 2023. So I hope you all have a wonderful new year, and we'll see you then to talk more hoops. Take care. Bye-bye.
Peace.